calling Map Making in the Age of AI and GPS. I'm Jennifer Rooks, modern-day Maine cartographers, including a recent MacArthur Genius Grant winner, join me to discuss map making today. We'll also explore the role maps have long played in framing our understanding of place, people, and history. How important are maps now? Maine Calling, Thursday, live at 11 and again at 8 on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today's maps might be created digitally, or they might be handmade works of art. Today on Maine Calling, we learn about the evolution of cartography and cartographers working today here in Maine. My guests today are Libby Bischoff, who is professor of history at the University of Southern Maine and executive director of the Osher Map Library and Smith Center for Cartographic Education. Am I saying that right, Libby?
You got it, Jennifer. Thank you.
Margaret Pierce, a cartographer and a 2025 MacArthur Foundation Fellow and Citizen Potawatomi Tribal Member. And Margot Carpenter, founder of Hartdale Maps. She has worked in cartography, landscape planning, and architecture. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you, like me, one of those people who just loves maps? Do you have a favorite map? You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, that phone number is different than the one for Maine Public's membership drive. Maine Calling's phone number is 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Welcome to Maine Calling. Margaret, I will start with you, and congratulations so much on the MacArthur Prize. That is a huge deal. I suspect that that announcement not only introduced you to a lot of people to your work, but also to the fact that there are cartographers working today. Tell me about the response. What's the response been like to the prize?
Yeah, thank you so much. And it's such a pleasure to be on this show. It was a huge surprise and wonderfully exciting and a huge honor. And I've heard from so many people from all over the world, reaching out to some people that I know and many strangers expressing their excitement, which is such a joy. And yes, it's amazing to it's amazing for cartography to get exposure and for people to wake up to the fact that cartography is a critical part of our lives together, and maybe it'll inspire people to get more into the field.
So a little birdie told me that most cartographers have really interesting journeys. So I'll start with you, Margaret, and then I'll ask Margo you the same question. How did you come to this field?
Yeah, we all come from different places. I came to it from writing. I grew up loving to read and write, always thought that I would become a writer. And then I got to college. I couldn't find a form that I loved or that I felt comfortable in. And I also had a lot of other interests. And one of those longtime curiosities was cartography. So I enrolled in an introduction to cartography class. And after the first week, I was like, this is it. This is the thing. Like, I just understood it really powerfully. And I think some people, like, I think many artists or writers or people who discover their calling in life, when you resonate with something and you just feel like you understand it really, really well, that was the experience that I had.
Margo, what about you?
Let's see. I have a different background. I grew up in the Caribbean in a very watery, beautiful place and have always been fascinated with the description of place. for undergrad, I studied environmental design, which is a four-year curriculum in architecture at the University of Colorado. And so in that curriculum, I was looking at drafting spaces in a two-dimensional environment on paper. From there, my master's degree is at University of Montana in environmental, Master of Science in Environmental Studies, and I extended that into landscape architecture and planning. I moved my interest in documenting, rendering the outdoors, the space into the outdoors. And after a little while, I was getting calls for maps. One of my first maps was a hand-drawn map for the Clark Fork watershed. And I, after moving east and having children, I decided to really focus on that. And I pursued a certificate in GIS to enforce that, which brings in so much information and so much data and permits a breadth of cartography. So that's my journey in a short.
Yeah, and I noticed that many of your clients, it seems from your website, are maybe nonprofit organizations or educational institutions. So I'm wondering, and I'll stay with you, Margaret, how do you approach a project when somebody comes to you and says, I need this map? Where do you even start?
Margo?
Oh, sorry, start with Margo and then I'll ask Margaret. Okay. Sorry.
The bulk of my work is mapping for contract. I subcontract for Community Geographics, and we do a lot of trail and conservation maps for environmental groups. And for me, a lot of those contracts are by word of mouth. I will get emails asking, can you do this for me? And I usually bring them into the fold of Community Geographics. It always starts in this scenario where we're working for a client, it starts with understanding what they want. So we're looking at their branding. We're looking at the depth of the trails, what data is available, and how we can wrap that into a product that meets their needs. I'm usually working in the print world. There is a corollary for the digital world. And so there are a couple different avenues for that. So every map is a little bit different because of the client's interests and covers. So on my website, there really is a diversity of maps. They're all client driven. Some of them are simpler. Some of them are more complex. And a lot of it is based on the budget.
And both your maps, Margo, and your maps, Margaret, are quite beautiful. Margaret, in announcing your MacArthur Prize, the committee described your work as creating maps that foreground Indigenous people's understanding of land and place. And I'm wondering what that means. How do your maps differ from many of the maps that we're familiar with?
Well, I think that, I guess as a cartographer and a Native person, once I really started digging into cartography, I quickly saw all of the ways that Native people are absent from cartographic representation, either on purpose or through not prioritizing Indigenous geographies. So I feel really obligated to work on that. I feel a responsibility to use the training, the education that I've received to change that. And so those projects have been, for example, I did a project for the Canadian American Center at the University of Maine called the Coming Home to Indigenous Place Names in Canada map. And it's basically a love letter to Indigenous people in the year of 2017 when the celebration of Canadian Confederation was underway. And there was so much talk about Canadian sovereignty at the expense of Indigenous sovereignties. So the Canadian American Center invited me to do a project that would contribute a strong statement about Indigenous sovereignties in that year. And so the whole map is of Canada, all entirely in Indigenous place names. And that's through the contributions of hundreds of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities.
So huge project. When I look at that map and I think, oh, isn't this interesting? Isn't this beautiful? I don't have any sense of how many people you talked to and how much work went into that.
Yeah, I would come home from working on that project and I was like, well, a long day at the State Department today, you know, just like hundreds of calls, and half of them were no. And that's a reality of doing cross-cultural collaboration, you know. It's learning how to work with people, bring people together across cultures. So that's one example of a map that elevated Indigenous voices at a time when they were really not being affirmed.
Libby, this is a good time to bring you into the conversation here, because Margaret's work makes us think about who is making maps, thinking about the perspective of the map maker, and you are surrounded by historical maps. We've all heard the expression that history is written by the victors. Is that the same with maps? Are maps made by a certain set of people throughout history?
Maps, it depends on, people have always been making maps, whether it's drawings on a cave wall or directions in the dirt, through cultures, through time. The maps that end up in libraries and who saves particular maps, yeah, there's a definitive power structure in the making of maps. And I think what gets saved and what gets put on display and what gets built into collections is very much a reflection of that statement. But we collect a little differently at the Osher Map Library and Smith Center for Cartographic Education. I certainly do. One of the great joys of building the collection is the ability to continue to buy maps. So yes, I am surrounded by historic maps, 500,000 dating back to 1475, come on down. But I am also surrounded by contemporary printed maps, including Margaret's. And Margaret, I have never gotten so many emails from people when your prize got announced. We're like, do you know her? She should come to USM, like friends. We do know her, and she has it. In fact, if you come to the map library, you can see two of her maps on display. So we've already had research appointments from that announcement of people wanting to come see your physical map. So it's really exciting. I think, Jennifer, part of our responsibility with teaching with maps is to ensure, for me at least, that anyone who comes into the map library can see themselves on a map. And that's really difficult. You know, I privilege collecting maps made by women. People think that's a new phenomenon. Women have been making maps for hundreds of years. And really ensuring ways to counteract that erasure, which Margaret mentioned, which is absolutely true, intentionally so, on a lot of colonial era maps from the British and the French especially. So yes, maps are often made by the victors, or that story is told, but certainly not always. And the diversity of perspectives that maps allow us is, I think, one of the most exciting things about them.
I'm still thinking about 500,000 maps, that you have 500,000 maps there. That's unbelievable. Libby, I'm wondering, I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about 500,000 maps. When you are looking for, why don't you give me an example of, I think most of us are familiar with the idea of the Mercator projection of maps and
Mercator,
and how
yeah.
the Mercator, I'm saying that wrong, Mercator, projection of maps and how it distorts the size of countries and how it makes Africa look smaller than it is and makes Northern Europe and Canada look larger than it is in perspective. And I'm wondering if there are other examples that you can give us of how the maps that we've grown up with in our textbooks are not really reflective of reality.
There's many examples. I think, Jennifer, we're used to seeing what we're used to seeing, right? And so the Mercator projection, which shows longitude and latitude, it's pretty useful for navigation. You know, it's been around since the mid-1500s, and it becomes a standard Western, like European projection that people see, but it's also the Google map projection. So people are used to seeing it because the maps that people encounter in their daily lives are often on that projection, or you may have seen it on a school wall. There are as many map projections as there are cartographers. There are dozens.
Hundreds.
One that even, centers Africa differently is the Gall-Peters projection. But the problem of projections is, right, how do you map a spherical Earth on a flat piece of paper, right? Like, that's part of the problem that projections are trying to solve. So we are constantly looking for different ways of viewing the world. We have a lot of globes. Just to give you an example, in our collection, we have hundreds of globes dating back to the early 1600s, many made in a Western tradition. But an Islamic globe has the poles opposite.
Wow.
And it's just different. We're often teaching children how to make maps. We do a lot of map making with kids. And we often will put maps upside down for them. You're used to seeing Maine on a north-south projection and thinking about down east into the Atlantic. You can draw Maine upside down. It's only upside down because that's how we conceive of it and where the compass direction is pointing. So
interesting. I have to cut you off because I have to go to a break, but we are talking about cartography and maps on Maine Calling. What are your questions? Our number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
And you're listening to Maine Calling on listener-supported Maine Public Radio. I'm going to give you another number, 1-800-866-1475. You probably know that number. It's how you make a pledge call of support to this public radio service. Hello, I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Lucy Santerre, who takes care of our digital social media.
That's right, Erwin. And I'm glad to be here with you on this lovely Thursday in November. It's a nice day. And you know what one might call this kind of weather? They might call it flannel weather. It's a great time to cozy up in some flannels, especially versatile flannels. I'm mentioning that because Maine Public has a really awesome item that is available for Evergreen friends who join us at $30 a month during our fall fundraiser. So for those of you who are looking for a little extra reason why you might want to join us as an Evergreen friend, that's someone who donates on a monthly basis. This flannel is a lovely incentive. And I was just outside taking some videos for aforementioned social media to promote this flannel. And we had a lovely time and everyone was cozy, just that thick, versatile gray and blue flannel on top of a t-shirt was warm enough for the Mainers out here down in Portland. So if you would like to claim that flannel, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 and share that you would like to become an Evergreen friend at $30 a month.
1-800-866-1475. That's the number to be in touch. There comes a caller now. Thank you very much for doing that. Thank you if you've already called during the pledge campaign. This is day two of our fall membership campaign. Once again, as we always like to say, and it's truer now than ever, you are the most important source of funding for this public broadcasting service. That certainly has been enhanced by the loss of federal funding, but we're still here thanks to you with your call next at 800-866-1475. When you do call, you will be entered into a giveaway for a trip to Prague. This is courtesy of our friends at Rhodes Scholar, a trip for two that includes economy airfare for two from Boston, 7 nights of accommodations, 11 meals, 6 expert-led field trips. There's another place one could easily sport your flannel shirt as you travel around the world.
That would be pretty amazing. If you call us at 1-800-866-1475, that would be awesome to see some people in Europe, out in the Czech Republic, that is, wearing their Maine Public flannels. And what better reason to call us today and get that donation in? And that's how you would enter in to win this giveaway of a vacation. And, we're listening to this episode of Maine Calling all about maps on this Thursday, and it's kind of getting my imagination running. Where do you want to travel to? Would you like to throw Prague into the mix? Or maybe you're looking to travel around the state of Maine and listen to Maine Public Radio in the car, because we are statewide If this is a valuable service for you, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainpublic.org/donate.
1-800-866-1475. We're going to go back to Maine Calling in just a moment, so it won't take very long. We've got some folks standing by to receive those phone calls right now at 800-866-1475. And when you you do, you can make that pledge, support the public radio programming that you rely on, be here each and every day. We have grown an incredible public radio service here over the last 60 years, and we've done it one phone call at a time. 1-800-866-1475. Our secure online website is mainpublic.org. And thanks.
Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning about cartography, map making, and the stories that maps tell. With me, Margaret Pierce, who is a citizen Potawatomi Native tribal member, a cartographer, and winner of a MacArthur Prize. Margot Carpenter, who is founder of Hartdale Maps, based here in Maine, and Libby Bischoff, USM professor and executive director of the Osher Map Library and Smith Center for Cartographic Education. Share your comments and questions. Why are maps important? How have they evolved? And why are they important to you? Send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Dan Mills, who is an artist and curator. Many of you know him as the former director of the Bates Museum of Art. Thanks so much for joining us, Dan.
Oh, thank you. Greetings, Jennifer and Libby. Margo and Margaret, loving the conversation on maps and cartography. Y'all do such amazing work.
It's so interesting to me because I think that you consider yourself an artist first, but you incorporate map making into your work. So I'm wondering, how do you think about maps? What do they mean to you?
Oh, gosh. Well, for me, I use maps as a space to explore ideas and visualize information. And maps are fascinating. They're full of, as you were describing, everyone, the Mercator projection is one example. They're so full of kind of human foibles. You know, I mean, just the idea of trying to take a globe and make it two-dimensional is kind of a fool's errand, right? But at the same time, we understand the information that's on them. People who might be prone to say, I hate abstract art, but love maps, fascinating to me, because we look at a map and we understand the information that's on it. Many are beautiful. As Libby pointed out, they're full of biases. They're often really political. So very interesting stuff. So I use them as a place to visualize information about what's in and under that map. So taking, I'd say, a painter's vocabulary and cartography, and trying to explore ideas that I'd say are different than, let's say, data visualization, which I think of as the practice of taking complex information and making it really clear and accessible. I make things that are deliberately complicated, dense and layered and overlapping, and with the hope that it slows people down to really look, and that their response isn't, oh, I get it, but is more of a charged, palpable, visceral response to what it is that they're thinking about.
Great. Well, Dan, I understand you have a show coming up, working with Libby, who's on our panel today. Tell us about it.
Oh, so excited. Can't wait to work with Libby and the Osher team. Our working title is Research Projects, and we'll juxtapose works selected from different series of mine, things like current wars and conflicts, or fictitious and actual lands, or other subjects, and then have them juxtaposed next to some of the a small number of the 500,000 maps that are in the extraordinary Osher collection.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. Dan Mills, an artist and curator. Thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with your next project. We'll go to some of the other calls coming in. We're going to go to Dwayne Toma, Passamaquoddy storyteller and former Maine Calling guest. Hi, Dwayne. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call this morning.
I'm thrilled to. Go ahead.
Yes, my question is not so much of a question, but I appreciate Libby and the OSHA Maps and that wonderful work that they're doing there. But I wanted to also extend an invitation on behalf of the Wabanaki people that we'd love to be able to work with others as well on place names, you know, the original place names of the Wabanaki peoples. And I'd love to explore some of that information and to be able to collaborate with the Wabanaki tribes. I think it would be a wonderful thing.
Margaret, I'm going to let you respond.
Greetings, Dwayne. Thank you for calling in. I had the privilege to work with James Francis and Carol Dana and Gabe Paul, and also down in Portland, Dr. Connor Quinn. We all collaborated on a map in 2015 called Translates to This Is How We Name Our Lands. And it's a map of Penobscot place names in Penobscot Nation homelands. When I had the privilege to come on to that work, as you know, Penobscot Cultural and Historic Preservation, they were already pretty busy working. They've been mapping their place names for years. And so we were just extending that outward. And then I learned about also Donald Saktoma, all the work that he's been doing, mapping Passamaquoddy place names. So we sort of, we included some of the Passamaquoddy names, honoring those names in that map. I feel like it gets wider and wider, and the more that I appreciate your inquiry, and feel like the more that people of Maine are aware of the Indigenous place names all around us, the more we can better steward the lands together and be good allies to Wabanaki nations.
Dwayne, thank you so much for calling in. Let's see, we'll go to Jay calling from Deer Isle. Hi, Jay, go ahead.
Hi. When I was growing up in Minnesota, my brother and I were always fascinated with maps, and he made it a lifelong career. Now he's a retired cartographer. And anyway, we were fascinated with globes. Everybody had a globe on their desk when they were kids, and I still do. But my brother pointed out one time that in places like New Zealand, in Australia, in South Africa, that little globe on your desk would be mounted in such a way where Antarctica was at the top. And I thought, how many people still think of north as up? Okay, so there's one question. The other one is, can anybody tell me the history and possibly the future of that huge globe in the old Delorme building in Yarmouth?
Yeah, so Jay, thanks for your question. And Libby, I have to ask you, do you have any of these globes that Jay describes at the Osher Map Library?
We have hundreds of globes. What do we like to say? The second largest collection open to the public after the Library of Congress. So people can come on in and see globes, school globes especially. We have quite a few of. I have to look and see. We do have globes with perspectives with the Earth in different northeast, southwest orientations for sure. I don't know what's happening to Eartha. I would love to know if anyone knows what's going on with Eartha. They're on Route 1 that I'm sure many people listening to this call have gone to pay homage to and visit the enormous model of the Earth.
Yeah. So if anybody knows, give us a call. I want to ask all of you sort of the big question. We all, or maybe not all, we will have audience members say I don't. Most people use GPS these days. Many people don't use a map for navigation, don't use a map in many of the ways we used to. How do you all think about that? Do you care? I'll go with Margaret. Margo, I'll start with you.
Okay, it's a good question. And one of the most frequent questions I get when someone learns I'm a cartographer is, well, hasn't everything been mapped? And there are so many types of maps. So the wayfinding maps that Google has sort of capitalized on are excellent. They're it's hard to compete with that. But there are, I mean, think of the redistricting maps. Think of the watershed maps. Think of looking at how many cell phone calls came from a certain location. Their maps cover a huge array of information. Anything that has a geographic location can be mapped. So they're not all wayfinding maps. They look at the ocean's energies. Consider some of NASA's imagery of the ocean's currents in the Atlantic, and they're dynamic images from afar that just evoke power and strength of the ocean. So although there is, and that can be an asset in my business, we're often looking at regional destinations where you can, we're at a scale where you cannot identify the exact trail. And what we do is refer people to Google Maps, but we are giving with a regional type of map, we are giving people an invitation to participate in that environment and relying on Google to enforce that a little bit, or Gaia Maps. We work hand in glove with that, but there's only one kind of map that we see. Well, they can be used in different ways, but it's such a micro focus.
Margaret, thoughts?
I appreciate what you just said, Margot. I think there's also a perception out there that maps are primarily technology, and that as a new technology comes along, it renders the previous technology obsolete. And I think that comes from the lots of corporate branding and advertising that tells us to put down what we already bought and buy the new thing that we haven't bought yet. And I don't see it that way. I see cartography as artistic expression, and there are many tools and materials out there that we can draw on. It really depends on what you want your map to say and what you want your map to do. And then you work with the tools and the data, the people, the places, the materials that are going to make that the best map that you have the ability to make. So I really push back on this idea of map technology leading the way as a digital technology, because printed maps, and you've convened three printed map people here today, printed maps have strengths that none of the other technologies have. So it's really important to listen to all the forms of cartography.
What you just said made me think of how people believe that photography would make painting obsolete.
Yeah.
And of course it has not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you would never say to somebody who was a videographer or a photographer, oh, well, doesn't video make your work obsolete? Well, no, they're just different forms of artistic expression.
Yeah. Well, we are talking about cartography and map making on Maine Calling. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. And if you're quick, you can get an email to us, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll continue this fascinating conversation after a break for our fundraising drive.
Hello there, everyone tuning into Maine Calling on this Thursday in November as part of our fall fundraiser. I'm here with Erwin Gratz, our local Morning Edition host. My name is Lucy Santerre. I do our social media here. And let me just say, I personally identify as a map lover. I think maps are pretty cool. I have one hanging behind my Zoom background. So if you like maps, if you like Maine Calling content, if you love everything that you hear on Maine Public, you know how important it is in your life. So why don't you give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org/donate. And show your appreciation for this programming that resonates with you and that you turn to day after day.
Takes just a couple of minutes of your time, and it means really quite a lot to this public broadcasting service. 1-800-866-1475. So we're here trying to do the business of public broadcasting. We're also going to see if we can give away a trip to Prague for a lucky donor. Now, this is available. You get entered into this if you call us at 800-866-1475. If you'd like more information about the trip, we have that available online, including information about how you can enter the contest even if you don't donate. That's important for us to say. But there are many, many other things that we do sometimes to offer. Thank you for becoming a member or increasing your membership pledge to Maine Public. You can find out more of that information online, or you can always choose to let all of your donation go towards programming like Maine Calling. It's all possible when you give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainepublic.org.
And you made an amazing point, Erwin. Think about the variety of programming that you tune into on Maine Public Radio or Maine Public Television. And maybe you're tuning in because you are someone who likes to stay informed about local and national news. And in a lot of ways, Maine Public is kind of like a one-stop shop. You can get your educational content, your news and journalism, your current events. I mean, Erwin, you give us the weather with our partners.
Your laughs. There's always Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And remember, in Maine Public, we do radio and television. So we're also talking about NOVA, science documentaries. We're talking about Frontline, in-depth documentaries. We're talking about American Experience history movies. We'll be talking about Ken Burns, a new series on the American Revolution coming up. We're talking about children's programming. It's all possible thanks to you. It's hard to convey sometimes just how far your contribution goes to improving the lives of people all around the state of Maine. 1-800-866-1475.
That's right, 1-800-866-1475. If you give us a call at that number, you'll be connected to one of our lovely volunteers in our Portland studio. We're a full house right now, and the vibes are amazing. We're getting phone calls every couple of minutes, hearing from people about their favorite programs and about what incentive they'd like. So if you'd like to be entered into that Prague giveaway, it's as simple as donating during our fundraiser, and you can ask about our other incentives when you call 1-800-866-1475 or when you visit us at mainepublic.org and click on that big donate button. Thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's show is all about cartography and the art and science of map making. My guest today, Margot Carpenter with Hartdale Maps, Libby Bischoff with the Osher Map Library, and Margaret Pierce, cartographer and 2025 MacArthur Genius Fellow. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, the number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Before the break, we were talking about today, GPS satellites. We haven't even gone into artificial intelligence. But Libby, we didn't have a chance to let you weigh in on the value of paper maps today.
It would be very disingenuous as someone who runs a giant map library to not talk about the paper maps. But I wanted to say something very serious about that in the 21st century. I really, Margaret, love that you referred to us as paper map people. I'm definitely a paper map person. Digital maps are really important. They are made by very talented map makers. They're an incredible tool. And there is absolutely a place for it going forward. And people always ask, well, are you archiving born digital materials? And at the moment, we're not, because we are a physical map library and there are other places that do that. And one of the things I think about as an historian, I mean, we have items in the collection dating back to the 1400s, is that in an age of digital erasure, which we see quite a bit, we see signs being taken down, we see things coming on and offline all the time, that an archive of maps seems even more important to me than ever as an historian, for all perspectives, that you can come in and you can physically see the items, and we protect and care for and steward the items so they can come through generations. Place names change, borders change, the way in which people see the world changes. And that physical archive allows people to understand that change and weigh into it. And so I would say, I've told other map curators, and like, I've doubled down on collecting and building physical collections right now because of, I think, a need to just preserve these different perspectives. So it seems really important at the moment.
We'll go to Ellery calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Cartography, an incredible topic. Thank you. A quick story. Two of us went to New York. There were three GPS units available. We got awesomely lost. Give me a paper map any day, any time. Yes, paper, please. My question is about sea maps, undersea maps. I love the old maps with sea monsters and shipwrecks and sea mounts. And is there much interest, not outside of the profession, in undersea mapping, undersea features, and their wealth of information?
Marco, you've done a little of this, haven't you?
Yes. One of my passions is mapping water, and I've done a fair number of bathymetric maps. There is ongoing work from NOAA to update their databases to improve the accuracy of the elevations, the undersea elevations, which is how we draw bathymetric maps. We tint the elevation data so you can perceive darker, deeper water or shallower water, and we add hill shades to make that pop out. And I don't think I'm getting into dicey territory here, but NOAA is doing the best they can, and they are underfunded. And so they are missing data. There are key areas. My particular interest is in coastal waters, and it is undermapped. There's a limited amount of data for those areas. So yes, there is quite a bit of information. And if you want to learn more, look at, and Libby could sign in on this, Maria Tharp's work. She put bathymetric styling on the map. Anyway,
Libby,
it's a good question.
And what, Margaret, what were you all going to
Margaret,
add to
Margaret, go
that?
Ahead.
I wanted to elevate Margot's work a little bit more, and for listeners to go to her website, Hartdale Maps, where you can see the way that Margot is really expertly representing bathymetric depths beautifully in her maps. And anyone who's ever tried to make a map of ocean depths next to land elevations, it's an extremely challenging thing to do in cartography because there are different data sets. There's very few data sets that bring those together. And there's also this incredible richness of detail right at that spot because coastlines are so changing. So it's one of the most challenging things to map. And you can see that done in a very masterful way at Margot's site.
Libby?
I was gonna mention Marie Tharp and also continue this tradition of amazing women mapmakers mapping the bottom of the ocean floor. Some of my favorite items in our collection are the large wall map size charts that Marie Tharp and Bruce Heason did in the 1950s and beyond to literally map what the bottom of the ocean floor looks like. And this is when you don't have nearly the amount of technology we have today. It's like seeing a complete other world under the ocean. And it's delightful that Margot is continuing on that really important tradition and that really important work.
Ellery, thanks so much for your call. Margaret, go ahead.
There's a great biography of Marie Tharp called Soundings by Hallie Felt, I think, wrote it. It's wonderful because her life was really hard and it really goes into all the challenges that she suffered while she was pursuing her calling.
Ellery, thank you. An email here from Greg, which is kind of philosophical. He writes, in some ways, roadmaps illustrate a continuum of life, the place where you start, where you expect to arrive, and you are somewhere along the way that you can identify. GPS is a metaphor of how we live today. There is no visible beginning or ending, only where we are right now without context. And Donna builds on that a little bit. She says, I certainly rely on GPS when traveling, but if I am going any distance, I always look at a map to get perspective of where I will be. And I am the same way. So I'm wondering if any of you have thoughts about either of these comments. Go ahead, Margaret.
I think that, I mean, getting going around to why printed maps are important. And Dan Mills, I started touching on this in speaking about his work in the sense of slowing you down. So not only do they bring in that wide angle and that context that is entirely missing from the navigational apps, they also are an open field. I think of a printed map as a book with all the pages present, and the cartographer is saying to the reader, okay, it's really your choice where you want to go. And it gives you this freedom to roam, slow down, think about interrelationships and context, and really get to know how where you are is interrelated with other people and places.
We have this 6 foot long wide map of fairyland from 1918 by Bernard Slay. And one of the things I love most about it, it's a very popular map in our collection. It has all of these routes and roads throughout the map in red. And there's one that brings the viewer in and it says from the world, right? Like there's always a way, like a cartographer is always making a way in for you. Usually multiple ways in as a viewer. And I think that slowing down is part of seeing that. And it's sort of like when you're using GPS, you're choosing routes. It's not really a way in, it's about efficiency. It's how to get there the fastest. And I think the wandering is really a significant piece of like the invitation to look at maps and really travel at your own pace.
Someone earlier was asking about Eartha. And we have an answer. This is an email from Deej. Yes, the giant globe Eartha is still at the former Delorme headquarters in Yarmouth, which is now a Garmin office. Visitors can see it for free in the building's lobby during business hours, which are currently 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We'll go to Katie calling from Newcastle. Katie, we're tight on time. If you could be quick, that'd be great.
I will be. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I live in Newcastle, and we have a piece of property, and looking back at the deed to the property on the river, it references a deed dated the 25th of January, 1792, in beautiful penmanship. It's all handwritten, and it references beginning at Webster's Rock Landing. And I'm just wondering, on the Damariscotta River, how I can find information about that rock. The property was sold to Daniel Webster in 1792.
I bet and Libby has an idea. Libby?
Yeah, deeds are their own form of textual map. Deeds are also telling you meets and bounds and like what actually maps a particular piece of property. The easiest thing to do is to start at your town clerk's office. Perhaps they will not be happy with me saying it, but maps, like historic maps of places, particularly in Maine and Massachusetts from the 17th and 18th century, tend to be in the places where they were made. Right? So start in Newcastle and work outward and make a research appointment at the Osher Map Library. We'll help you.
I have to say goodbye to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. Jane Donahue, our board op today. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Calling, part of your day here on Maine Public Radio, your chance to kind of get into interesting subjects with interesting people and to get your own questions answered. Hello, I'm Erwin Gratz, local host of Morning Edition, along with Lucy Santerre, who handles our social media here at Maine Public. We're going to take a break for just a couple of moments to ask you to support Maine Calling and all of the programming here at Maine Public Radio. You can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-866-1475, or if you prefer, you can go online to mainepublic.org. You just kind of click on the big red donate button, and it'll take you where you need to go. It takes a couple of minutes of your time, and it is so important, especially now in the wake of the end of federal funding. You have always been our most important source of funds for this public broadcasting service, and that is truer now than ever. So please take a moment to give us a call. Our volunteers would love to talk with you ahead of lunchtime. So.
That's right. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And it's as easy as calling 1-800-866-1475. We love to hear from you and we love to be able to guide you through the donation process. It is so easy. And one of the amazing incentives that is available right now during our fall fundraiser is a exclusive early access to Hidden Brain tickets. Now, you probably know Hidden Brain as the show with Shankar Vedantam on radio, Maine Public Radio. You might have heard it across the nation. Lots of stations play that program. It's definitely a crowd favorite. Well, the host, Shankar, is going to be on stage in Maine in April of 2026, and you could be seated in the front of the house if you call us during our drive and donate $300. It takes a one-time donation of $300 to get two tickets to that show, and you'll be the first to get tickets. You'll be guaranteed amazing seats, and we would love to be able to offer that to you. So that's a show on April 3rd at the State Theater in Portland, and it's as simple as calling us and making a one-time donation of $300. And Erwin, I don't know if you've been to a show lately, but tickets for shows are pretty expensive, so this is an amazing deal. I mean, to get those seats, you'd probably be spending $300, but this $300 would go to supporting Maine Public. It would go to our programming, and it would help us make programs like Hidden Brain possible, because we need to be able to afford to air those programs. So call us at 1-800-866-1475 and let us know if that Hidden Brain pair of tickets is calling your name. That's 1-800-866-1475.
You know, there are lots of ways to contribute to Maine Public, one of which, of course, is to become one of our evergreen friends. These are the folks who make regular monthly contributions, which is great from a cash flow standpoint for Maine Public. We think for most folks, it's a little bit easier than trying to remember which pledge drive every year that you've made your annual pledge to Maine Public. But here's something else to keep in mind. A lot of folks do like to do Evergreen Friends pledges, and we're happy to take them however they come, credit cards or direct from a bank account. But if you do use an electronic funds transfer from your checking or savings account, the nice thing about that is that it saves us here at Maine Public the transaction fees that we have to pay when we process credit cards. That actually adds up to a tidy little expense for us here. And of course, we would prefer to put that money, your dollars, into programming. So that's the way you can do that. 1-800-866-1475. That's the phone number. MainePublic.org is the secure online website where you can make all of this happen. Just a few minutes. We're going to Here and Now.
That's right. This was a really interesting episode of Maine Calling, all about cartography. I know it made me think about maps and the way that they represent the world around us and history in a new light. And that's the amazing type of programming that you'll be hearing on Maine Public Radio all throughout the week. Perhaps you're tuning in because you look forward to Maine Calling, or perhaps you tune in anytime you're in the car. I know that that's the case for me. My car is preset to Maine Public Radio, and I know that when I'm listening, I'm helping to make that possible for everyone else, because it's free to turn on the radio. But how do we make radio? With listener support, listener and viewer support. So give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainpublic.org/donate. It's really easy. And like Erwin said, if you do that through your bank account, it becomes a part of your regular monthly budget, and you can sit in ease knowing that you are making this possible and that you are part of that community. That number to call is 1-800-866-1475.